Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you're listening. In 1995, an American guitarist named Banning Air traveled to Mali to live with and learn from one of the great musicians of West Africa. It was the continuation of a journey to explore international music, especially African guitar styles. Banning Air eventually returned to New York with a much larger repertoire and a set of very interesting stories that comprise his book, In Griot Time, An American Guitarist in Mali, published by the Temple University Press. And during this hour, Focus 580, we'll talk with Banning Air about African music and his experiences in Mali. We'll also play quite a bit of music, including recordings from some of Africa's greatest and best-known artists. And we'll get a chance to hear some of Banning Air's recordings from his album, Living Room African Guitar, which includes the track we started the show off with. You have probably also heard Banning Air on NPR, including music reviews and features on All Things Considered, and on the series Afropop Worldwide. He's also the co-author of the book Afropop, an illustrated guide to contemporary African music, and the author of an instructional book on African guitar entitled Guitar Atlas Africa. He has played on four albums by Thomas Mapfumo, and a song they created together became a hit on Zimbabwean radio. Banning Air will also be in Champaign-Urbana this weekend to perform in the Wall-to-Wall Guitar Festival presented by the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The festival, as we will continue to relentlessly remind you all week, runs from Thursday through Sunday and features a mind-boggling array of the world's most amazing guitar players of all styles. Our guest during this hour, Banning Air, performs this Friday evening at 7 in an event called Guitar Around the Globe. And we will talk with Banning Air during this hour of the show. If you would like to join us, your questions are welcome. All you have to do is pick up the telephone. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. And Banning Air joins us this morning by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Jack?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, well, happy to do it.
The book has a lot of very interesting stories.
Yeah. Yeah, they still seem interesting to me, too, all these years later.
I'll bet. Well, let me ask you, you know, just to sort of kick things off, what got you interested in African music?
Well, I was exposed to quite a lot of it when I was in university at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. I had probably an earlier predilection to it because my mother was very interested in music and collected folk songs. And my father was in the shipping business, and we went to the Caribbean when I was about 10 or 12, and I heard steel bands and calypso and things like that, and was very interested in that. And then, at university, as I mentioned, I was exposed to a lot of African percussion music, and also I heard my first recordings of the West African kora, which is a model for the guitar music that I studied in Mali years later, and the mbira from Zimbabwe. So by the time I graduated from university in 1980, I had the idea in my head that there was this whole very beautiful, lyrical, fascinatingly rhythmic kind of music that wasn't specifically drumming and percussion music that most people thought of when they thought about Africa. But it was really a few years later when my classmate and colleague Sean Barlow was doing his research to create Afropop Worldwide. He started sending me recordings of very guitar-intensive music, and actually other friends too. And it all sort of happened at once. I heard the Zulu finger-picking guitar from South Africa and some of these West African genres. Would that imitate the kora and other traditional instruments, and also from Zimbabwe, the same thing, guitar imitating, taking on the voice of traditional African instruments, the very ones that I had become so intrigued with in university. And that all led to my first trip in 1987 and 98 with Sean to four African countries, and I had an assignment from Guitar Player to do a piece on African guitarists. And basically, once I got in the field in Africa and, you know, with a guitar in hand and had the experience of sort of sitting face-to-face with another guitarist and saying, teach me something, and they show me something, and then they start playing their guitar with it, and I started to realize just what an incredibly beautiful interactive art this was. I just got hooked, and everything kind of went from there. It pretty much took over my life from 1987 on.
Wow. Well, in the book you describe the experience you had living with and studying with Jelimari Tunkara.
Tunkara, yes.
Tunkara. I wasn't sure. I'm a Midwestern Protestant here, so, you know.
No, you're doing very well.
Oh, thank you.
The pronunciation so far. I was impressed.
Thank you very much. Well, how did that come about, that you came to essentially study under him?
Well, that came about as a result of my second trip to Africa in 1992. And by that time, I had started listening to a lot of recordings, and I had realized that Mali was this incredible gold mine of guitar players. And Jelimari was one of a handful that had been recommended to me by people who really had looked into Malian music and said, oh, well, if you're interested in guitarists, you absolutely have to meet this guy. So, you know, Jelimari has a very diverse artistic life, and one part of it is that he plays in one of the lead sort of classic electric dance bands of Mali called the Super Rail Band. So it was a fairly easy matter for me to meet him by just going to the hotel at the train station in the center of Bamako where the band practiced. And so I went. I had written him a letter, so he had some idea that I was coming. But what it was exactly, because sometimes Jelimari can be not entirely welcoming to people who come and want to learn from him or photograph him or film him or write about him or anything. But in my case, he was very welcoming that right from the start. And he invited me out to his house, and I met his family and saw just this incredible sort of beehive of musicianship that happened in and around his compound. And I was in Mali just a month that time, and I was doing a lot of different things, but he taught me a couple of things in that first meeting that I just practiced obsessively over the course of the time I was there, so that by the end of my trip, when I went to see him again, he saw that I had, you know, worked and was trying to play using his very unusual technique, because there's a whole way of playing the instrument that is sort of unfamiliar to most. It's unlike other fingerstyle guitar techniques. And that's what I was really hooked on with him, is the acoustic fingerstyle guitar. What he does with the rail band is fabulous, but the thing that really made me want to study with him was his acoustic fingerstyle way of playing. So with that in mind, I basically... He said to me, and perhaps in an offhanded fashion, as I was leaving that first trip, he said, oh, he said, Benny, if you stay with me 6 months, I could teach you to play like I do. And that just stuck in my head. I just thought, well, God, I have to do that, you know. So it took me some years to figure out how I could actually go there for that long. But, you know, when I sort of saw the way, I wrote to him and said, well, are you serious about this? And he said, sure. So that was it. I went in 1995, and I ended up spending 7 months there, and I didn't learn to play like he did, but it was a good time.
Well, you certainly picked up a lot of stuff, though.
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah. And I continue to work on the stuff he taught me then. I mean, it really did reorient the whole way that I play guitar by trying to learn his technique, because it basically just wiped out a lot of other things I'd been doing, and I you know, started to learn how to play, trying to get this particular voice that he has.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the risk of sounding too guitar geek-like, can we talk about that technique? Because I think it's, you know, for one thing, you know, we're going to have this wall-to-wall guitar festival.
Yeah.
With people with so many different styles and techniques and approaches and you know, everything. But the West African style, and perhaps Jelimari style in particular, is so unique. Can you talk about what is different about it?
Sure. First, I mean, Jelimari is totally unique in a lot of things that he does. But the particular style we're talking about, it's not all of West Africa, but it is bigger than just Jelimari. A lot of West African fingerstyle guitars techniques are two fingers, thumb and the first finger. But in the case of the way that the griots, and now we're talking about traditional praise musicians of West Africa, to put it very, very generally. They have this way of... Basically, where all these techniques come from is they're trying to get a sound that's not a guitar sound out of a guitar. And somehow, guitarists kind of came about this idea of using the first finger as effectively as a flat pick, picking in both directions. And now, normally, if you watch a fingerstyle guitarist in almost any style, whether it's classical, you know, bluegrass, the various kind of ragtime finger-picking country guitar styles we have in this country, most of the time the hands, the fingers are curved around so that they're plucking with the well, the part that's closest to the thumb, shall we put it that way. But in this technique, the finger is stretched out towards the neck and plucking with the side that would be away from the thumb, and doing it in both directions. And it's very straight. It's like this. It's like all the movement is really coming from the base of the finger, mm-hmm. and the middle knuckles do not really bend much. So it's got a very strong sound and a very percussive sound, and that combined with a lot of hammering on and pulling off, you know, playing notes using the fretting hand effectively, not actually picking them, allows the player to get these kind of very fast flowing lines that you associate with the kora, or the balafone, or the ngoni, which is a traditional lute they have, kind of like an ancestor of the banjo. So all these, within that basic thing of stretching the finger back, using it, picking in both directions, and using hammer-ons and pull-offs, there are all these other refinements that get you closer to those particular instruments. And Gelamati has all his own fancy tricks within that. But that's the basic thing that's really immediately obvious to any guitar player who sees this style being played. They go, my God, what is that finger doing, you know, because it's very unusual. And the other fingers do little or nothing, and yet there's all this sound.
We're talking this morning with Banning Air about the music of West Africa, Africa in general, in particular guitar music, and we're going to play some music in a couple of minutes, but I also want to just reintroduce our guest. He's the author of the book In Griot Time, An American Guitarist in Mali, and you've also probably heard him on Afropop Worldwide and perhaps on National Public Radio's All Things Considered, doing music reviews and features. And if you want to join our conversation, you can do that, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. One thing I also wanted to ask you about, and then maybe we can play some more music, is the range of instrumentation and the role of the guitar in particular, because you mentioned a couple of, the kora and then ngoni and some of the other more traditional instruments, but it seems like the guitar has really taken over.
Well, I don't know about taken over, yeah. But it's certainly taken its rightful place. I mean, it's taken a place of great respect in Mali in general and among the Mandé griots, or jellies as they call them locally. And that's interesting. I mean, you know, in my sort of looking into traditional, really roots guitar styles in Africa, it's always a fascinating question, especially when you're talking about music that has great social significance like the griot music does, to sort of see how much respect the guitar gets. I mean, just briefly by contrast, when you go to Zimbabwe, you have this amazing cadre of guitarists who've learned to accompany and imitate the mbira, a traditional thumb piano that's used in religious ceremonies there. But you would never see the guitar actually played in one of those ceremonies. I mean, that it just does not have that status, and it never will. But it's very interesting how in Mali the guitar... There's pretty much nowhere where you couldn't see a guitar because it somehow the situation was too serious or something like that. There just that doesn't exist. It has completely achieved a position of respect. And while you won't necessarily see it at a performance of griot music, you would be as likely to see it. You know, there's a sort of a thing where in the different countries where they have Mandé people, Gambia, Senegal, Guinea, Mali, and others, but those would be the principal ones. There are favorings of instruments. In Gambia, the kora, the 21-string harp, is the favored instrument. It's sort of the composer's instrument, and it's the most common one you see. In Guinea, it's the balafone, the wooden, slatted, you know, xylophone-like instrument. In Mali, it was always the ngoni, which is the fretless spike lute, they call it, because the neck is just a piece of round doweling that goes through the body like a spike. But I would say the guitar is definitely rivaling the Ngoni, because almost any Ngoni player can play guitar, and so there's a real natural movement of the technique. In fact, that whole picking technique I described is pretty much the picking technique that already existed on the Ngoni, so it wasn't necessarily invented as much as transferred. But anyway, maybe it's partly because of the fact that the Ngoni was the most important composing and accompaniment instrument in among the griots in Mali, that the guitar just naturally kind of sidled in. But I just find it interesting that it gets so much respect. There's no stigma attached to it. Oh, this is a foreign instrument. This is something that's been introduced. We have to view it with suspicion. You really don't get that. And I find that very interesting, because you do find that in a lot of other places.
How about that? Well, let's play some more music. I have not a vast collection of African music, but I do have your disc and the Neofunke, or how do you say that?
Oh, good.
Yeah, from Ali Farka Tour.
Well, we can come to that. Why don't you play, as a way of just letting people hear the guitar and the Ngoni, why don't you play track 4 from the In Griot Time CD, which is it's a duo I recorded between Jelamadi and his nephew Adama, who's playing the Ngoni. So you can kind of just hear the two sounds and how they're different and how they're very similar because of this technique.
Unfortunately, it was the person I borrowed the book from wouldn't let me have the disc, so I don't have that.
Oh, damn.
I know. I don't have the disc that goes with the book. I have your disc, and I have some Salif Keita.
Oh, when you said you have my disc, you meant the one that I recorded.
Yes.
I see. Okay. Well,
apologies.
All right. Well, that's too bad. But anyway, folks, if you really want to hear the real thing, you'll have to do that. But okay, well, then next best, I suppose, given what you have, would be me playing that guitar style, and it's not anywhere up to Jelamadi, but we'll have to make do. I think there's a version of the song Kulanjan on my track.
Yes.
Why don't you play that? It'll give you some idea of this technique.
Okay, great. Let's hear that. Okay, well, I better hit it there. Okay, so that's Kulan John off of Banning Air's disc, Living Room African Guitar. And I'm sorry I don't have that other disc.
Yeah, well, no, that's if anyone reads the book, I do recommend that you get the disc because yeah. it has all the artists in the book, and as much as I try to describe what their music sounds like, there's nothing like actually hearing it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you about the technique and the sound because what I'm hearing is, especially on the higher sort of, you know, the lead voices in that, it's very bright yet very round kind of note.
Yeah, well, the thing about that technique is that it has all these colors. I mean, some of them are these kind of blurring effects where you just have a lot of notes. But then when you want to play a melody that really stands out, like the higher guitars thing, because it's a two-guitar version of the song, it's very strong. It has this real kind of declarative voice, you know, which is interesting because it's very much of a piece with the way singing is in griot music. Because, as I say in the book, griot music is not really about instrumental. I mean, it's interesting because it has the most fabulous instrumentalists that you'll find anywhere, you know, in Africa, anywhere in the world. Really, they're just sensational. But they really aren't the main show. The thing about griot music is all about singing and vocals and using the voice and words to evoke a very profound, powerful sense of history and, you know, what has happened and how did we get here and who are the families that did this and that to get us where we are today. And that focus and this using that as a sort of semi-improvised and semi, you know, kind of relying on tradition way of praising people and bringing them up and making them feel good about themselves. That's what it's really about. But you do hear, and if you listen to some of the singing, you know, that you can hear, for example, I think you have the Taj Mahal record.
There's yes.
good examples of there. But that character, that very strong declarative singing, is also inspires the guitar style.
We have a call to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. And we're a little past our midpoint, so let me mention again, we're talking with Banning Air. He is the author of the book In Griot Time. He's also a guitarist. And we're talking about African guitar and a variety of styles. And we're going to play some more music. And I'll mention again that Banning Air will be performing this Friday at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts as part of the Wall-to-Wall Guitar Festival. And he's taking part 7 p.m. Friday in an event called Guitar Around the Globe with a bunch of other very, very great musicians.
Yeah, I'll say.
We do have a caller. We welcome others if you want to join us. 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us. 800-222-9455. We have an Indiana listener on line number 4. Good morning.
Hello. Mm-hmm. This is more or less a comment. It could turn into a question, I guess, but I was just a short distance listening to that short piece, and the first thing that came to my mind was Segovia doing some small Bach thing, and I was wondering if there's any connection in the fingering technique at all. Thanks.
Sure. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, well, part of the thing is, of course, that you're hearing me play it as opposed to an actual bona fide griot guitarist. But really, all the fingering there is coming from things that I was taught by African guitarists, and it's not. I mean, that sense of the classical connection is remarkable. And I had studied classical guitar, and I must say, it probably predisposed me to become attracted to this particular guitar style because it is so kind of elegant and refined, and yet it's also. If you notice, there's an interesting rhythmic tension going on in that piece. If you listen to it, you can hear it either in 6 or in 4. There, both of those, and that kind of rhythmic complexity is really the only thing that would tell someone who didn't know what that was that maybe they were hearing something from the Southern Hemisphere, you know, or from Africa more particularly. But I understand the comment. I would say that there's no exact connection. I mean, you know, certainly the guitarists who created this did not hear Segovia or Bach or anything like that. This really does come from their very old traditions. But you know, once you move it onto the guitar, and particularly you put it in the hands of a at one time classically trained American guitarist, and that feeling maybe comes through even a little more strongly than it would if you heard it played by Joe Amati.
Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of music. Maybe we should try to play some more. And you mentioned the Taj Mahal and Tumani Diabate album. Do you want to get into that territory?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting project because you know, one of the things that I certainly dealt with a lot in the course of being in Mali is the sense of connections between American music and Malian music, because a lot of the Africans who came to this country during the years of slavery. Many of them, probably the largest group, came from West Africa, and quite a few of them came from the Senegambia region during the time of wars and upheaval in Mali, in what is now Mali. And so a lot of people from the interior who were captured in war ended up eventually in the United States, particularly in the whole sort of Louisiana region, coming out of New Orleans, where there was a great preponderance of slaves from the Senegambia, as I say, many of them have been captured in these wars. So, without getting into all the details, because it's a very complicated subject, exactly where everybody came from, because a lot of it has been obscured. But there's a sort of if you just back away and look at the general picture, there is a real historical basis for the notion that there's a connection between this kind of music, and by this kind of music I mean generally string picking music from West Africa, and our string traditions. And people always talk about the blues, and this is, of course, the thing that drew Taj Mahal to the subject because he's such a blues aficionado. But I think that there are also connections with other kinds of finger picking and folk American music that maybe come through in different ways. In different songs. Now, this album, Kulanjan, is very interesting because Taj didn't bring any of his own musicians. He just brought himself among a group of, I believe, six very, very great Malian musicians who were themselves not exactly a group. Some of them had played together a lot, some of them not so much, and they played different kinds of instruments, and so they did lots of different kinds of things. That record, Kulanjan, which I was fortunate enough to be around when it was being recorded in Athens, Georgia. A lot of different things happened, but one that's really interesting in terms of the blues connection, because people mm-hmm. are always really curious about this.
Yeah.
If anyone knows anything about Malian guitar music, that the person they're most likely to know, and we'll just footnote this and mention it later, is Ali Farka Touré, mm-hmm. who made a Grammy-winning record with Ry Cooder back in 1993 or 4. And he represents a northern Mali style of music that's closer to Arabic music. It's desert music. It's quite different than what I've been talking about so far. But when you really get into Mali music, you find that there's actually a lot of music that uses five-note pentatonic scales, like the blues, including sometimes the actual blues scale. So there's that connection. But there are also things just about the rhythm of the music that are striking. And one track that I really love on the Taj Mahal record is his version of Old Georgie Buck, which is probably an old banjo song, if I'm not mistaken. But he's accompanied here by an instrument called the Kamalangoni, which is a harp, from six-string harp from southern part of Mali, very related to the sacred Dosongoni, which is a hunter's harp, but it's smaller and higher pitched and sort of freer from all the taboos and strictures of hunter's music, which is very, very intense and very sort of codified and secret and that sort of thing. But the Kamalangoni is free and wild and used in all kinds of party music, and particularly in this pop style called Wasilu. So basically this guy is just playing a very typical Wasilu recording riff. Mr. Koulibaly is playing it there. And Taj just starts basically... I mean, this happened all very spontaneously. This is the way these sessions were. They'd just try things, and when something seemed to click, they'd turn on the machines and record it. So that's how you get this version of Old Georgie Buck. Let's listen to that for a second.
Sounds good.
said, Georgie Bucket there. In the last words he said, sing, he didn't want no shortening in his bed. Shortening in his bed, swimming in his head, singing high, 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 high. Listen, Georgie had a wife, just a moan for his life. Three children there were properly bathed. Is dead, and the last words he said, sing, he didn't want no shortening in his bread. Uh-huh, shortening in his bread, swimming in his head. Ha, 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 ha.
Well, that's just amazing.
Yeah. That high instrument, by the way, is the ingoni of the griots. So, in fact, you really have various traditions coming together there. The American one, the Wassailou one that I mentioned with the deep harp, and then that high instrument is the ingoni being played by Basiku Kouyaté, who's quite a genius.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I also will take this opportunity to mention that Taj Mahal is also performing at the Wall to Wall Guitar Festival.
That's right.
And that's
Thursday. With a great choral player, I believe.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Alas, I think the tickets are sold out, although I don't specifically know that. That's what I kind of heard. But I will mention the website, which you can get lots of information from, walltowallguitar.com, very simple, or you can call Cranert for more information. And as part of this festival, there are a whole lot of free events, too. So, you know, if you haven't got tickets, don't despair, because there are many opportunities to interact with a lot of the musicians and take part in workshops and all kinds of very, very good stuff. So I'll just throw that in there.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of the blues, as you said, is, you know, some people, you know, try to draw this very direct connection. And I guess I'm still curious. You said a couple things about that. The pentatonic scale can be found certainly in Africa, although not, I mean, there are other scales as well. But it's also interesting that the pentatonic scale can be found in China and all over the world, really.
Well, one thing is that there's not just one pentatonic scale.
Yeah.
There are, you know, I mean, it's a pentatonic scale. Any notes, any scale with five notes is a pentatonic scale. In Malian music, there are three different pentatonic scales that are used commonly. One is a major one that sounds very much like sort of country happy kind of music, and it sounds very familiar. And that's, I think, that is the one that is often found in a lot of Chinese music, for example. Then there's one that's kind of more ambiguous, which is the one that was in the piece we just heard, which doesn't actually have a third degree in it, so it isn't either major or minor. It's kind of ambiguous, and there's a lot of varieties of that. That's actually probably the most common one. But then there are some that use exactly the minor pentatonic scale that is the fundamental scale of the blues. And when you hear that, that really is pretty persuasive, you know. But it really isn't about, I mean, to me, what I love about that Georgie Buck track is that it's just so natural. It's that the fit is so natural. It doesn't exactly prove anything or demonstrate anything, or there's no historical point really being made. But just when things fit together that easily, you kind of feel like there has to be some kind of a logic in the sort of underlying DNA of the music. And then when you look at the history, you see a pretty clear explanation. For example, like, you know, you can find pentatonic music in Central Africa, where virtually no slaves ever came to this country, and you wouldn't have that same feeling about it. Or similarly, the Chinese stuff. I mean, yeah, it's a pentatonic scale, but it's not going to remind you of American folk music in quite the same way that does.
That's very interesting. Another question I wanted to ask you, I'm curious about this. In many types of music around the world, we're not just looking at 12 pitches in an octave.
Right.
There's a lot of microtonality.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how that fits with African music.
Well, it becomes more pronounced the further north you go in terms of something that's well understood, and that's because microtonality is a hugely important feature of Arabic music. So the more you get into the deeply Islamic areas, then you get more of that. As far as on the playing instruments, now an instrument like the kora or the guitar, you can bend notes, but most of these guys, don't bend notes. So where you really get microtonality in Malian music is in singing. And it's kind of, I don't know how codified it is. They wouldn't really talk about it like the Arabs talk about microtonality, and they're very, very conscious about what they're doing with it. That's not so true here, but the sound is there. The sound is there in particularly, as I say, in vocal performances.
Mm-hmm. We're moving into about our last 12 minutes with Banning Air, our guest. And by the way, I should spell his last name because it's E-Y-R-E.
Like Jane.
Right. They're very good. And he's the author of the book In Griot Time, An American Guitarist in Mali. Also does work for Afropop Worldwide and a variety of other things, including performing this weekend at Cranert.
We should mention that I will be performing with an amazing griot singer guitarist named Abdullah Jabate, who we're very privileged to have living here in New York. And he's actually the younger brother of the griot singer on the Taj Mahal record, Kasamadi Jabate. So he comes from a line of really amazing musicians, and for me it's a great honor and pleasure to perform with him because he's just a fabulous musician.
Well, I actually have one of his discs, the disc Haklima, and we could play something off of that. I was also, you were just speaking of vocal music, there was Salif Keita.
Yes.
And so I'm not sure which direction we should go, but I'd like to play some more of this, especially the vocal stuff. Should we?
You know, actually, what I would recommend in terms of giving you a sense of the real sort of, well, you know, we've talked a lot about this griot music, and one piece that really pulls it together fabulously is another one from the Taj Mahal record, although it's one that Taj himself hardly plays on. It's really where he lets the griots do their thing. And that's number six, Gede Manna, which is a traditional song. And this is sung by Kasamadi Jabate, who, as I say, is the older brother of Abdullah Jabate, who I'll be performing with. Mm-hmm. And I think that piece, perhaps more than any of these, really gives you the august character of this griot music. So that might be my pick.
Okay, let's hear some of that then.
Yeah.
Ganhei do Zoluma, quase não do Zolu, do Zoluco.
Well, I'd like to play more of that, actually.
Yeah, he's just getting warmed up there. But there it is. You got a little bit of a hint of it at the end there.
Yeah, and I think I hear Taj in there on guitar a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, he is. He's playing along.
Yeah.
Hanging in there. Those guys are pretty intense.
We have a couple callers to talk with.
Good.
Let's do that. We'll go next to someone in Champaign, line number one. Good morning.
Good morning. Turned on, so I don't know if you guys have covered some of this or not. We are moving to South Africa in January for sabbatical, and I would love to have some resources, either musical or book-wise. I'm going to be homeschooling, and so I want to expose my kids as much as I can to African music and culture. So if you have any recommendations, I'm ready to write them down.
Well, one thing I'd recommend is have a look at the website of our of Afropop Worldwide, afropop.org,
okay.
Which has a lot of it's a big place. There's a lot of things there, but if you sort of go to the South Africa section and read about some of the artists, if you go to the Explore section and say artists or say country South Africa, and then you'll find that will limit you down to the artists of South Africa, and you can get some recommendations and read some stuff that way. You can also, if you email me at banning@afropop.org, I can give you some more specific things. But South Africa is fabulous. It's a whole other world from what we've been talking about here, but there's plenty of great music there. And you have to look a bit for it because the commercial music scene is very oriented towards kind of hip-hop and very electronic youth music that doesn't show its roots as much as some of the older music, like what you would have heard on Paul Simon's Graceland or something. But it's there. You can find it.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. And good luck. Sounds like fun. And the diversity of music, obviously, Africa is a big place.
Yeah, sure is.
One thing, just following up on what you mentioned, though, in terms of, the commercialization, but also the electrification of music. I mean, electric guitars certainly have taken hold as you write about in the book, and also, some of the other newer technologies in terms of, amplification, keyboards, drum machines and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the book deals with my battles to try to convince producers and artists not to use keyboards and drum machines in Mali, something of a losing battle. Although, it's a fascinating thing, the way the music of Africa, the modern music of Africa, is changing very fast. And many people are afraid that things are being lost, And perhaps in some cases they're right, but in other cases I think it's a bit of an overreaction because the music changes, but in many cases the old music is not lost, and it reemerges in new and transformed ways. And I mean, right now the big phenomenon is what you might very generally call hip hop, but basically rapping and dance hall techniques and all this kind of stuff. Much of which Africans already sort of have a discourse that says, "Well, this is ours already. You got this from us. So don't tell me we're borrowing it." You get into a lot of this is a very hot topic, and it was the keyboards and drum machines in my day, and now it's all about this sort of electronic production and hip hop and are people forgetting how to play instruments? And, it's a very interesting area of discourse. But the thing I found looking into the hip-hop is that there's a lot of new stuff happening there. There are a lot of voices being freed to talk about things that were taboo or were off-limits to artists before. So there are good and bad aspects to it. It's a very complex subject. But there is a tendency among foreigners who fall in love with African music to to sort of want it to stay where it is. And frequently Africans reject this and resent it because it's like, you know, well, you know, we're alive too. We're moving and we're in the modern world as well. So we get to, you know, do whatever we like. And that's right in the end.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, you know, I also wonder to what extent you write a little bit about the politics of Mali and the sort of role of musicians as Mali moved out of the colonial period, how that has affected and perhaps, you know, in good and bad ways, as any change will create, you know, the role of musicians and their ability to, you know, both connect with the historical, the traditions, and the need to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's in Mali. I think musicians have had a pretty healthy role in discourse about social subjects. A lot about role of women, polygamy. Is polygamy still appropriate? And in these times, these kinds of things get dissected quite a lot in music, and even much more now in the time of this rap music. You know, since I lived in Mali, I was just there earlier this year, and I was fascinated to see that some of these rappers that they have there are very, very bold in their, you know, talking about corruption and condemning corruption in government, and some of them have made songs that were so strong that the current president of Mali, Alpha Toumani Touré, actually responded to one of them in a speech, you know, saying, you know, well, you know, I have received your message, he said, because the song was called The Message. You know, that's remarkable, that level of, you know, to have an artist who's singing something that's really openly critical of the government, which is quite a rarity in African music. I mean, not there are examples of it, but not a lot. And then to have that person be respected to the point where the government would respond to them, I mean, that's a new thing, and that's very interesting. To me.
Well, we're unfortunately going to have to leave it there since we're out of time.
Good.
But I also want to mention that, you know, if you want to catch our guest, Banning Air, Friday, 7 p.m. at Krannert, part of the Guitars Around the Globe performance, and also a lot of other great events at the Wall-to-Wall Guitar Festival at the Krannert Center. And you can look at walltowallguitar.com or call the Krannert Center for more information. And also look for the book In Griot Time, An American Guitarist in Mali by our guest, Banning Air, last name EYRE.
And if you have any trouble finding it, you can just come to my website, banningair.com.
Very good. Banning, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Jack. It was a pleasure.